I'm Tony Hendro.
And I'm Jeff Kreisler.
And this is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
30 minutes of sizzling satire with teeth.
It's time for the Final Edition Radio Hour's finance feature, Money or Die. The media world is abuzz with the news that Jeff Bezos, CEO and founder of Amazon, will buy the Washington Post for $250 million. The Final Edition's Stone Peck caught up with Bezos for this exclusive interview.
Mr. Bezos, buying the Washington Post must be very exciting for you.
Oh, it's a dream to be a part of, you know, whatever it is the Washington Post does.
The news.
Right. I knew it was something newsy.
Now, how did you come to acquire the Post?
I don't know. I just put it in my cart.
I don't understand.
Then I proceeded to check out.
Are you saying you bought the Washington Post on Amazon?
Well, of course. That's how I do all my shopping.
What was it selling for?
I don't know. It was marked down. The reviews were good.
Well, they should be. The Post has been an important paper since 1877.
The reviews only go back to March 2011. It got an average of 2.5 stars.
You put your trust in those reviews?
Not all of them. Some were fake, but you have to look at the reviews as a whole, just like with the ones for the Hutzler 571 banana slicer.
Are you comparing Washington's most prestigious paper, which helped expose a U.S. president's crimes, to a kitchen utensil?
A fun, plastic, dishwasher-safe kitchen utensil.
You see the news as a product, like any other, that you can sell cheaply online.
I see the news as essential to democracy, to keep folks informed about what matters most.
Well, speaking as a newsman, that's a relief.
Just kidding. News is what you look at in between housewares and books.
If you had owned the Post in 1972, would you have guided Woodward and Bernstein to their Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of Watergate?
Watergate. Is that like Water Pick? We always have those on sale.
This is Stone Peck for the Final Edition.
We have a countertop water flosser, clinically proven, $59.99. Stone?
Thanks, I'm not interested.
$5 off.
Ooh, okay, I'll take it.
Proceed to checkout.
There are many candidates running for mayor of New York City, but none of them are as committed as Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger stands for such community policies as...
Wow, a Jewish girl who sucks... This thing is ready to do damage.
And a strong economic plan, like...
I slide my... in you slow at first, then harder. My are slapping your... With each thrust, you squeal a little. I start to... You're so hard, your almost hit you in the face. You reach behind and spread your...
Carlos Danger, the man who has a vision for New York City to lead the Big Apple into the future with progressive strategies like...
So I walk into a hotel room and you're at the end of the bed naked, except for some amazing me shoes. Your legs are spread and your feet are flat on the ground.
Carlos Danger, the candidate whose plan is beyond the old regime.
Was hoping my fat would be a selling point too.
Carlos Danger for mayor in 2013. The man who cares for New York City.
I'm Anthony Weiner, and that's the name I'm running with now. And I approve this message, and I want to put my in your while you wear me shoes.
Welcome to the Final Edition Summer Filler feature, 1 year ago today. 1 year ago today, the big financial story was the LIBOR fixing scandal, in which major international banks manipulated the global benchmark interest rate, which underpins $35 trillion worldwide, in derivatives. These organized criminals manipulated the LIBOR rate for their own bank's profit, thus robbing investors of value in their investments. LIBOR was the worst instance of massive sweet crime in the already long history of this century's financial malfeasance. White-on-white crime of this magnitude has no precedent, yet not a single one of the criminals who perpetrated it has even been indicted, let alone jailed. 1 year ago today, the Final Edition suggested a reason why.
From the makers of The Italian Job and Ocean's 11, it could be the greatest heist of all time, stealing millions, maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars. And the ragtag gang behind it had just one thing going for them, one thing that would help them get away with it, that the crime they planned was so incredibly boring.
So we're not going to rob a bank?
No, we are banks.
We're the biggest banks in the world, and we're just going to manipulate an interest rate. And then we're going to make investments based on that artificially high or artificially low interest rate.
I've already stopped caring.
Regent Pictures presents LIBOR.
Okay, you'll get a phone call from a guy who's setting the London Interbank Offered Rate, and he'll ask what kind of interest rate you, a bank, could get if you borrowed money from another bank.
I want to fall asleep right now.
Then you tell him the rate we give you, which is a little too high or a little too low. And if enough of the other 15 banks also give false numbers, then the interest rate will be set artificially high or artificially low for banks borrowing from other banks.
Kill me.
Just about all other interest rates in the U.S. and Europe are based on the LIBOR rate.
This is so boring.
So we, the banks, make investments based on the interest rates that we, the banks, artificially manipulated.
Oh, God.
Who are the victims? Everyone. No one. Crap. I don't know.
Gentlemen, you're under arrest for colluding to manipulate the world's most widely used benchmark for short-term interest rates.
Oh, my God. Stop talking.
LIBOR. It's probably really, really important.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. For the 40th time, Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives have voted to repeal the WPA. Our Pinky Malone of the old Washington Post is still in Washington.
The Works Progress Administration was created in 1935 under President Franklin D. Roosevelt during the New Deal, and it officially ended in 1943. On the 70th anniversary of its non-existence, the House voted once again to repeal it. I asked Speaker John Boehner why.
Well, we've got 70 new members who have not had an opportunity to vote on the President's Works Progress Administration. None of them were even born when it passed or ended, and frankly, they've been asking for an opportunity to vote on it.
A lot of people say this kind of vote achieves nothing.
Well, I don't think so. The WPA is expensive.
It was expensive.
Exactly. It drives up the cost of construction. It puts government in competition with private industry. We're trying to get the spending under control here. We're also voting to repeal the construction of Hoover Dam, impeach Lincoln's Secretary of State William Seward, and cancel the moon landing.
The one in 1969.
Well, both of them in 69 and a few others in 1971 and 72. The only mission we're keeping is Apollo 14, the one where they hit the golf ball. The other flights have to be trimmed. Look, we're doing important work here.
But why? Why are you repealing the moon landings?
Well, the moon's still there. The mission was a complete failure. Look, we in the Republican Congress are going to come up with a plan that takes care of the moon once and for all.
That was Pinky Malone in Washington.
And now, Episode 1 of Miles the Millennial.
Fellow boomers, I'd like you to welcome our new intern, Miles. Miles is a millennial.
Oh, hello, Miles.
That's a whack name.
Did your mother have you on a road trip?
I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hey, guys, awesome.
What's awesome, Miles?
You guys interning for a startup?
We're not a startup. We're a multi-billion dollar company.
Do you know who you're interning for, Miles?
I put it in my cell. Hold on a second.
Boominet, right. Miles. The Health and Life Extension Project. We're the number one wellness network for young seniors, bringing together the biggest, best, and brightest generation in history so they can live longer, better lives.
Awesome.
Do you actually know what awe is, Miles the Millennial?
Hey, it's like the stuff metal comes from.
That's O-R-E, Miles. A-W-E means amazement at someone's power, charisma, and achievements. Amazement tinged with intimidation.
Awe sounds awesome.
You know, Head Boomer, Miles isn't wrong when he uses the term awesome about us.
Given that we have all the power and most of the money.
And aim to keep it that way throughout the long and rewarding lives we're looking forward to.
Awesome?
You have a girlfriend, Miles?
Do I have to tell you?
Yes, you do.
It's a key part of Boomernet culture to be frank and open about your sexual status.
And preferences.
And experiences.
And experimentation.
It's mandatory, Miles. Your job's on the line here.
I'm seeing this chick, yeah?
Is she a real girlfriend or just a friend who delivers one particular benefit?
We've been hanging out a while.
What's her name?
Bree.
Bree? What kind of a name is Bree?
I hope it's short for, say, Brianna.
Or Bria, or Brielle, or Briellen.
They're acceptable girls' names.
No, just Bree. It's a cool name.
Miles, when you first met, did you know that Brie is a cheese?
No, I don't do cheese.
Senator, I'd like you to meet my daughter Brie, and this is her boyfriend, Cheddar.
From now on, Miles, we think we're going to call you Cheddar.
Brie is a very pungent, runny cheese, Cheddar. Do you think of your Brie as very pungent and runny?
Only when she's sitting on my face.
Ew!
NSFW, Cheddar.
There's a lady present, Cheddar.
Did you perhaps hope in saying that, Cheddar, to make us feel bad?
Envious of your sex life?
Because you think we fantasize about having sex with men or women half or a third our age?
In short, that we're dirty old boomers?
Maybe, a little bit.
I'd call that blatant generational discrimination, Cheddar.
Ageist, too.
We may have to consult our attorneys about that remark.
Do you have an attorney, Ched, old sport?
Are you kidding? I don't have a cent.
So, if we choose to press charges for workplace discrimination, you'll be up shit creek without a paddle.
Wow, Ched, old sport. This could be the total end of your career. On the first day of your first job, too.
Are you guys serious? Seriously? I was just trying to make a joke. I didn't mean it. Seriously?
We'll let you know if our attorneys recommend reporting you to OSHA or whatever the applicable federal agency is.
Oh, my God. Please don't report me. What will I tell my parents? Oh, my God. I need this job. My student loans are crazy. I'll do anything. Please. I'm really sorry.
Too late for apologies, Jed Oldsport. You can't unfry an egg. Let's get to work.
Okay, first assignment. Go learn by heart everything in the If You Don't Buy This Magazine, We'll Shoot This Dog issue of National Lampoon.
The what of the what?
Don't ask questions, Miles. You're not a questioning generation. Google it.
On it. But why?
So you'll know what's really funny.
Way funnier than Judd Apatow movies or Colbert or Louis C.K. or Jimmy Kimmel.
Or The Onion or Funny or Die or BuzzFeed or College Humor.
WTF or Jezebel. Or Reddit, or Dig, or HuffPost Comedy Page.
I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles. I could see for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
This is the Final Edition Radio Hour.
And now, a public service message from a joint spokesperson for CBS and Time Warner.
Hello. In the ongoing battle between CBS and Time Warner, viewers aren't always sure which corporate giant to side with. CBS wants a 600% increase in fees, while Time Warner hides its rate hikes in modem rentals. Who's right and who's wrong? On behalf of CBS and Time Warner, I'd like to give you an answer. Who gives a flying fuck? Is your life going to end because you're missing what the idiot racist girl from Staten Island is saying on Big Brother? Are you going to feel pain in your heart because you can't keep up with a bunch of B-list actors who couldn't find another job who are living under a dome? Do you care that you can't watch The Big Hack Theory or 60 Minutes, otherwise known as The Show with That Unwatchable Lara Logan? Rest assured, both CBS and Time Warner are mainly committed to their shareholders and only partially committed to you, the hapless consumer of entertainment twaddle. Whatever these two monolithic scumbags work out between them, when it comes to your needs, they will continue to make you bend over and culturally, financially, and spiritually irrigate your rectum. That's something that will never go off the air.
That was a joint announcement from CBS and Time Warner. If you want to watch CBS, try buying an antenna. Yeah, right.
Welcome to the Final Edition Summer Filler feature, 1 year ago today.
Scientists at the Leonard Alfred Schneider Botanical Institute in Tel Aviv made a momentous announcement today. Director of the Institute, Professor Ari Seidelman.
We have concluded, after extensive study and research over the last two decades, that Palestinians are a unique genus of ambulatory plant life.
Surely, Professor, that's a radical change from how Palestinians have traditionally been thought of.
Oh, yes, indeed. For years, informal, though not scientifically established Israeli policy had assumed Palestinians to be a large species of insect. but that is wrong.
The announcement may complicate the ongoing global push for official UN recognition of Palestinian statehood. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel.
I welcome these findings, and all Israelis should welcome them. They are a huge step forward for Palestinians. Plants, after all, are a crucial part of our global environment. And who can breathe without plants? Plants deserve care and respect. Insects, who cares? We squish them, right? But then again, how can plants have a nation? What are they going to call it? Rutabaga land? Zucchini stand? Cucumberia?
That sentiment was echoed and amplified by conservative think tanks in the U.S. that oppose official recognition of Palestinian statehood. Heritage Foundation scientific attaché, Erin Crystal.
Our view is that the focus should not be on the upgrade of Palestinian life forms from insect to plant, but on how toxic the plant can be to neighboring life forms. As we know, Palestinians have a documented ability to root themselves in any kind of terrain and spread voraciously, destroying everything in their path. The real issue now is, are Palestinians plant or weeds?
The American Enterprise Institute took a harder line. Chief counsel for the AEI, Sherman Lank.
The Schneider Institute study finally annihilates our progressive colleagues' absurd contention that Palestinians have rights of any kind. Plants do not have rights, including but not limited to property rights, rights of assembly, free speech, freedom of religion, right to privacy, due process, the right to an attorney, or the rights of combatants. The authors of the Geneva Conventions on Human Rights wrote their rules for humans, not weeds. We are under no obligation to observe the rules of war for a species without rights, nor do we have any criminal liability for our actions toward them, whether that court is in Virginia or in The Hague.
Before publication, the study was rigorously peer-reviewed by the Dinesh D'Souza Institute of Neo-Eugenics at West Texas Christian University, the Adolf Kors Center for the Study of Hairy Peoples at Pepperdine, and Charles the Bell Curve Murray.
You're listening to the Final Edition Radio Hour. Visit thefinaledition.com every day for more sizzling satire with teeth.
A message from the offices of Harvey Stanko, attorney at law.
Have you been injured at your job or been left disabled due to a negligent medical procedure? Are you paralyzed and cannot feed or take care of yourself? Just, like, trapped in your own body, you know? Like worse than dead, literally. Like, when you're dead, whatever. But if you're just like, you know, you can't talk, you can't move, you gotta communicate by moving your eye, like the guy, Stephen Hawking, you know? I have a living will. If I'm ever like that, I got a guy, bam, two shots, back of the head, that's it. I can't even take minor stuff, you know? Like, my cousin, he touched an electrical wire at work and now he can't taste anything. Tea, Tabasco sauce, styrofoam, rat poison, strawberries, it's all the same thing. I would go slowly nuts. I mean, I'm not even a gourmand or anything, it's just that... Oh my God, listen to this. There's a thing called Perry-Romberg syndrome. I was up all night reading about it. I have this weird insomnia. It's a whole thing. Anyway, when you get Perry-Romberg syndrome, half your face shrinks. Like, the left part of your face is smaller than the right part. Like, a lot smaller. Forever. And it's not inherited. Anybody can get it. Anytime. Oh my God, I've been staring in a mirror all day trying to see if anything's changing. As soon as this commercial's done and the camera guys leave, I'm going to go right back. I got to be in court later today, but I can't stop looking.
Harvey Stanko, attorney at law. He's not very good.
And now, a selection from the Final Edition's very first album, The Vinyl Edition, available now on CD Baby and iTunes. Your purchase will be a gift of life. WBEZ, Chicago.
It's a new world. The factories are gone. And while this isn't your father's Oldsmobile, they're not building Oldsmobiles anymore, so even if your father hadn't left you when you were 8 and made you spend your life writing poetry about the trauma, he wouldn't even have an Oldsmobile. I'm Ira Glass, and today on our show, It's a New World, stories of people making do in the new economy. Act 1, Our New Thing. Diantha Stasis Friedman reports from Brooklyn.
Sarah Sparrow Biasetti is dressing for a meeting, or as she likes to call it, a meet. She carefully adjusts her wooden beaded necklace.
My friend curated a video retrospective of the 1970s, and I just fell in love with them. I think of them as like little individual bullets of vegetable life. I'd love to wear one of my skirts today. They're made from recycled fabrics picked up at the Goodwill. There's this maker in Bushwick, really interesting example of reuse, but we're on our bikes today, so I guess not.
We ride over to Third Eye, a shop selling handcrafted objects in Fort Greene. Sarah doesn't like to shake hands. She says it's an artifact of the days when people had to prove to enemies they were unarmed. So instead, she greets the owner, Ian Danforth, with a hug.
Great to see you. The shop is looking so great.
Thanks.
These wooden briefcases, they're gorgeous. I love the irony.
Thanks.
But aren't they, like, vulnerable to fire?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're made of wood, so I guess...
Wow, did you see what happened to that tea shop on Adelphi Street? Totally burned out.
Yeah, I heard, so...
So listen, my friends and I, we have this art collective thing, but we're also getting into personal wellness. We try to secure spaces, you know, make them stable in a kind of energetic and physical way. This is such an energetic space. It would be a shame if something happened to it.
Back at what she calls her office, the back room of a food co-op called Kai Organics, Sarah talks to me about her vision of entrepreneurship.
It's kind of a free-form business model where we don't so much work in traditional flows of capital from consumer to producer, but we insert ourselves into the process in interesting and sometimes transgressive ways. I like to think of it as just our thing.
For example, last year, Sarah and her partners, mostly art school graduates and indie filmmakers who didn't get the grants they wanted on Kickstarter, started talking to the many Starbucks stores now in Brooklyn. They came up with a novel plan. The stores would hire avatars, people who draw no espresso shots, who don't actually show up for work, but are nonetheless paid.
We think of it as a victimless performance.
That's Michael Wolkover, Sarah's partner in life and business. He's tall, with a bushy beard and a ubiquitous bicycling cap.
In one state of being, I'm working at Starbucks, doing the 8-hour shift, getting paid. In another, more physical state, I'm out making my images of the waterfront. Or maybe I'm down at the bar.
Michael and Sarah head up one of the many collectives, or crews, of artists, writers, and liberal arts majors who came to Brooklyn to pursue their muse and found the arts weren't what they once were.
There are a lot of inefficiencies in the traditional business model, a lot of places where stuff falls off of trucks, and we happen to know a lot of bicyclists who follow trucks around.
Things are going well for Sarah and Michael and their friends, especially now that they've resolved a conflict with another group based out of a weaving workshop. Both groups were vying for opportunity along the gentrifying Atlantic Avenue. Fortunately, that conflict was resolved when the weaving workshop burned to the ground, killing two. For now, Sarah and Michael are happy with where things are.
We're not a traditional hidebound business. We let people find their own way, create their own models, whatever feeds their spirit. All we care about is how thick the envelope is at the end of the week. And of course, if people are growing.
Funny. I used to think I could make a living just by being myself, but now, forget about it.
Yeah.
Diantha Stasis Friedman in Brooklyn. Next up, a guy who hits people over the head and takes things from them. Stay with us.
Time glass, the time beer.
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Darby Worley, Antoot Shell, Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, Jen Dodd, Rachel Lyon, Kevin Janis, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Rob Gordon, Peter Sagal, and Tony Hendra. Get on over to thefinaledition.com for more sizzling satire with teeth. And again, remember, our very first album, The Vinyl Edition, is available now online on iTunes and CD Baby and the like. The Final Edition Radio Hour was produced by Jeff Chrysler and Tony Hendra and edited and engineered by Greg Russ. The Final Edition Radio Hour is a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2013.